This is Place Matters, a podcast at the intersection of race, place, and poverty, where we explore the belief that the path towards ending inequity and promoting prosperity is through the work of holistic neighborhood development. Welcome to the final series focusing on one of FCS's three pillars. During this season of Place Matters, we will focus on the pillar of economic development. I'm Sean Duncan, the Director of Training and Consulting for FCS, and the host for Place Matters. What would it mean to put the lens of place on how we judge the health and effectiveness on our economic development efforts? What if it's not just about the number of jobs created or services offered or the local tax revenues created? What if the purpose of economic development was to create neighborhoods of vibrant social connectivity, of pride and neighborhood identity, and of accessible opportunities for people of all income levels to grow personally and professionally while increasing the wealth and well-being of all? In this episode, we are talking about the future of historic South Atlanta's economic development, as we also spend time comparing and contrasting some of the common models of economic development with this place-based mindset of assessment. Joining me in this conversation are Marvin Nesbitt, our Senior Director of Community Development, and Jeff Delp, our Director of Economic Development. So in this series, we've talked about what FCS has been doing the last few years in economic development so far. Today, I want us to talk a bit about where we're headed, kind of what we're thinking about, and also to bring up some various models that exist in economic development, how they do or don't work when you bring the place-based lens into the picture. So as a kind of a recap, you know, FCS takes this idea of like right-sized retail to really fit the environment of the neighborhood, and also like pre-market interventions, like how do you start businesses when the market won't sustain them, but we have to put them in there for the health of the neighborhood, and like we're willing to subsidize them. So that's what we've been up to for a number of years now. As you guys think about the next 10, 20 years of economic development for FCS, what do you see that's changing about where we are, and what are some of your hopes for what are some new things we can experiment with as we move forward?
Well, I'll jump in there first, Jeff. Don't speak too fast. I think it's... you know, it's a mixture of, you know, continuing doing some of the things that we're already doing. Mm-hmm. You know about community grounds. Mm-hmm. You know about the Carver Market and mm-hmm. the benefit that's been in mm-hmm. terms of providing employment opportunities for individuals from the neighborhood. And mm-hmm. I think this past year we did something that I think was a great idea, you know, helping individuals to be in a position to earn livable wages. So mm-hmm. we looked at wages across the market and mm-hmm. and decided to increase wages to ensure that not only that they were competitive on the open market, but they were also able to put individuals in a place to where they can mm-hmm. do a better job of mm-hmm. Or be in a better position to really support their households. Mm-hmm. And so we were really excited about having that opportunity to do mm-hmm. so. Jeff put a lot of work into doing the analysis around that and what mm-hmm. it would take, and we were able to get that accomplished. So continuing to do some of that is going to be, I think, critical and important for us mm-hmm. And for the individuals that we employ in the market. But I think moving forward, it's really a lot of continuing to really understanding what the needs and desires are in the mm-hmm. community, mm-hmm. and then being able to identify opportunities in partnership with those who are responsible for economic development in the city, mm-hmm. right? Such as the city and such as yep. Invest Atlanta, mm-hmm. and seeing how we can attract some of those resources or secure some of those resources yeah. that fund great economic development opportunities here in the neighborhood. So what does that mean? So mm-hmm. what does that look like? So we're talking, how do we help individuals start businesses here yeah, in, the, okay. in the neighborhood? How do we help get funding for micro enterprises? How do we help turn some of those informal businesses into formal businesses? How do we help existing businesses sustain themselves here in the neighborhood? And then how do we attract new businesses in the neighborhood and new businesses that bring quality jobs for individuals in the neighborhood and that new businesses that don't come in and dwarf the neighborhood, so to speak, but really be an asset to creating vibrancy here in the neighborhood and really developing that sense of place. And I think that there are some solutions and strategies that we would be implementing in the future that's going to help us really accomplish a lot of that.
Yeah, to add to everything Marvin just said, small job. Nothing to.
So what are we going to do after the first 6 months when we wrap that up?
So one, how it's going to change a little bit is in for the last 10, 15 years is we have served as kind of the operator of the primary business, right? And moving forward, the neighborhood has grown and the area around us has grown to the point where now we feel confident of going out and asking an entrepreneur, a business operator, say, hey, would you open up your restaurant here? We think that you could make it versus 15 years ago, they would have laughed in our face, right? And so we're doing that now. So across the street, we are in the process of leasing up a restaurant space because that is what our neighborhood has asked for the last 15 years. They love community grounds, but they want a place to go get wings or go get lunch or go get dinner and it not be too shady. And so we're bringing in, and it's going to be run by, she could run the business anywhere, right? But she's chosen here. And so that's, and we're going to ask her to do many of the same things that we have done, hire locally, make sure the menu has something on it or several things on it that neighbors feel like they can afford to keep that same ethos, but to move it away from us subsidizing a business to it being an entrepreneur who then is also creating wealth for herself, right? That's ultimately, if anything, last 10, 15 years, that's kind of been what I wish we could have done more of, is help to create wealth for people, not just a living wage job, but to add to that. So that's one. And then kind of what I've done just as a little pet project, but also what I think is really important to future of economic development on in a neighborhood, is to continue to work with our city around infrastructure and around transportation. We are, and then we've talked about this a lot in other episodes, but we are designed as a cut-through neighborhood, right? And so that doesn't really do well for producing businesses that thrive on neighbors, right? So we need people to be able to get here, get around. So MARTA with BRT, a tenth of a mile away, with the Beltline being a tenth of a mile away, working with the PATH Foundation to build an extension, make sure MARTA bus routes are operating efficiently and effectively, and working with the city where we can include sidewalks, but help to create, because ultimately a good built environment does a heck of a lot to help produce a neighborhood scale economic base.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think when we think about economic development, it's just a matter of, like, can we get businesses here? But to think about, you can have two neighborhoods of a similar economic demographic profile where one has got a thriving business district and another one doesn't. And to recognize, like, the what can feel invisible to us is, like, all of those infrastructure things you just mentioned are what can promote healthy businesses to exist or not. And it's not just about, I mean, the income and density certainly matter, but, like, are we even a place where cars are going to slow down enough to stop and be present? Are we a place where people could walk easily, safely, to spend their dollars in the neighborhood where we are?
And if you know Atlanta, right, you know West End, right, you know Ralph David Abernathy, right, pedestrian corridor, you know Kirkwood, you know East Atlanta. Our main street, which is what we like to call those districts, we used to be here right outside of our store. Unfortunately, many of those buildings were torn down over the last 40, 50, 80 years. And so really to recreate that sense of building a place, a main street that can be that vibrant hub for everyone. Again, it's only a small, I mean, we'll do that.
It's small.
Next Tuesday, we'll knock that out.
How long did it take us to just get a crosswalk?
But I think what we're talking about here is we're really making a business case, right? Mm-hmm. And we're developing a business case that we can use to put in front of businesses, put in front of young entrepreneurs, and put in front of funders that really says, this is why this community is primed and ready for your business investment.
Yeah.
And it's
and not just a charity case.
It's just
here.
Not just a charity case, right? This is really a great opportunity. I mean, we are right here, right steps away from the Beltline, and of course everybody wants to be around the Beltline. Mm-hmm. We're steps away from new restaurant mm-hmm. development here, which is, you know, we can throw a stone and hit it. Mm-hmm. We're right here just south of downtown. I mean, mm-hmm. we can really walk downtown mm-hmm. from here. So there's a lot to love mm-hmm. about the opportunity that Southeast Atlanta, historic South Atlanta, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. presents mm-hmm. for potential and inspiring businesses.
So this is actually a commercial for any of those business owners out there to just get yourself yeah. down here to South Atlanta. Come in early. Get in.
We're going to be on a realtor. Our faces will be on the pamphlet.
I want y'all's faces on a bench, a bus seat. Just so I can.
Come to South Atlanta.
I think that's a good idea, though. Yeah, we put that on the side of the monitor. No,
there's lots of good posters on the monitor stops. I like it. There's a lot of other kind of common economic development models that people point to, lean to, that they want to happen. But I want us to apply like a place-based lens to it to see, like, you know, we'll take one for example. I think when I hear people talking about economic development, what often is they're trying to like land the big whale. Can we get an Amazon factory? Can we get Microsoft? Can we get like this huge company that's going to offer 1,000 jobs or 4,000 jobs or whatever? And like that's this huge win for economic development, that we get this big factory that gets lots and lots and lots of jobs. What's the pros or cons to that kind of thinking around economic development, especially when we're doing place-based neighborhood level work?
I think I'll kind of surprise you, Sean, actually think a lot of those things can work.
Okay.
What's missing is the place-based connection, right? Mm-hmm. So if Amazon, a couple of years ago, remember HQ2, whatever yes. they called it, right?
Yeah.
Amazon was going to come with their headquarters and bring thousands of jobs, and everyone's mm-hmm. talking about what would do to the housing market, and mm-hmm. right? And so obviously if Amazon was here and had a bunch of jobs, there would be lots of good things about mm-hmm. that, right? But I think what gets missed on those high-level, multi-billion-dollar mm-hmm. projects is the place, is what, without intentionality, without saying we are going to do X, Y, and Z to ensure affordability, mm-hmm. to ensure that we're hiring people from this geographical area, it's just going to get missed.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and you, it's kind of like trickle-down economics, you know, mm-hmm. from the Reagan era, right? Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't. I mean, you might get a little puddle down here yeah. at the bottom, but when yeah. someone else got a full glass of water, right? Yeah. Like, and so what we would say is, hey, how do we ensure mm-hmm. that more people, particularly down at the bottom, mm-hmm. get their fair share of the right. of the pie, and not just be this thing that we can spout off number of jobs and number of
houses. You've got 3,000 jobs and 2,000 of them moved from out of state to take.
Yeah, don't really measure or care about who got those jobs. And yeah. I've always talked about, like, we could open up a factory across the street that employed 500 people. Without intentionality, less than 5% of the people would come from our neighborhood, because mm-hmm. all these mm-hmm. other folks would just drive in and get those jobs, right? Yeah. So there has to be, whatever it is, if it's the Amazon, if it's, you mm-hmm. know, something else, there has to be, someone's got to be working with them to say, hey, how are we going to mm-hmm. affect this place yeah. or this group of people, and be intentional about mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, I like to refer to it as responsible investment. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for us. And the seat that we sit in, mm-hmm. I think we're responsible for ensuring that it's responsible investment into this community, right? So mm-hmm. Just like Jeff said, if Amazon wanted to come in here, we could welcome them with open arms. But it's not just about coming in and providing 2,000 jobs, mm-hmm. right? What's the real investment mm-hmm. in this neighborhood and in this community, and continuing the growth and the growth trajectory that the community is on, right? Mm-hmm. And not just like the broader community, but each individual. Mm-hmm. Like, what's your commitment to each individual other than giving them a job? But it just, like, yeah. how do we say that, you know, our being here is mm-hmm. going to really, really lead to your economic mobility.
Yeah.
All right. You can, because if you just come here and give me a minimum wage job,
yeah.
doesn't mean that you're really contributing to my economic mobility. Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So how do we ensure that it's done responsibly and with place in mind?
Yeah.
Is the real question.
And ultimately, mm-hmm. I think and we talked about this with Ryan, I don't know what order these episodes are going in, but these big, massive things come in and it changes overnight.
Yeah.
Right. And so if we want to use economic development tools, we have to, those tools have to take into account that our neighborhood hasn't gotten here overnight and it's not going to get to where we want it to go overnight.
Yeah.
And so coming in and splashing big amounts of money, you know, offering jobs, like that might not be what our neighborhood needs right now. So, you know, if Amazon comes here, it may not be about providing 2,000 jobs to historic Southland. Mm-hmm. It might be, hey, how do we invest in schools? How do we invest in housing? How do we build the infrastructure so that this next generation that's coming could apply for a job and get it just like anyone else gets, right? Yeah. So I feel like our attempt to help often misses what the neighborhood need is.
Yeah.
And if you can if the economic development tool that we're talking about matches the neighborhood need, then you have a win.
Yeah, yeah.
But too often there's a mismatch.
Yeah. It's like the killing a fly with a sledgehammer or something, like at some level. And I think it was that somebody else had a metaphor of like of investing in historically disinfested neighborhoods to say, yes, do that. But it's oftentimes when we finally start paying attention, we want to like flood it versus slowly irrigate it. Like like that level, that speed, that pace, that weight of that investment can actually – it may solve a bunch of jobs problems, but it created a worse neighborhood problem.
Absolutely. For neighborhood. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What do you feel? I'm like one of the critiques of the, we'll stop using Amazon as a name. So the not because we're against Amazon, but like the big employer, right? Yeah, so the big employer option, one of the critiques is the tax breaks that they get to be recruited in so that they, so we get all those jobs, but all that tax revenue is a loss. Do you feel like that's a legitimate critique on the kind of the big employer invitation that like, okay, now we got jobs, but there's all this public investment that is now not happening because of the tax breaks?
So my response to that is probably bigger than what you were asking for, right?
That's why I ask these questions.
But I think we have a problem in this country where we are competing with one another. Mm-hmm. So if Atlanta doesn't give a tax break, then you might go to Birmingham or you might go to Dallas, right? And so there's this competition, right? And then in that, so we might land company X to be in Atlanta and give them all these tax incentives, but there's no guarantee that those people who work there or actually live in the city of Atlanta.
Right.
Right. And so it's just this, the way we've developed our cities and our society allows for this disparate way of investing that can kind of silo things. Mm-hmm. And there's no guarantee. So if company X came to Atlanta and we can guarantee that people lived in the city and stayed in the city and all that money stayed in the city, then great. But to me, and I can't prove this, right? But to me, I feel like a lot of the money that the city of Atlanta gives away ends up really benefiting the region and not the city of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And that has been historically been my problem, right? Yep. You have this, like the region exists because of the economic center of Atlanta, but that the people who've lived in the city of Atlanta have borne this burden that's greater than what they are getting back because all this money is being funneled out to the surrounding areas and not really being shared in a way that's beneficial.
Where if we could control for that, it may be that like, okay, there's a tax break here, but the net gain of the dollars that are going to stay local from people who live in Atlanta, work there, get paid there, spend their dollars there, like you could maybe justify those tax breaks, but when you can't control for that, then it's really just the city loses, but while the region benefits.
And especially if you don't have anyone that's really paying assigned to really pay close attention to ensuring that that happens, right? And I think that is probably the biggest issue in ensuring that the people that it was designed to really benefit are benefiting, is that we don't have that ongoing attention being paid to it that it really needs to ensure that it's happening, right? The intention up front was but then of course you have changes in administrations and things of that nature. So sometimes it just falls through the cracks, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, then next thing you know, you have the employer who is allowed to just kind of operate and make decisions that are best for the business instead of what's best for the region or for the city or for the neighborhood that they've been awarded to serve. Mm.
We got this group called the Fulton County Development Committee or Commission.
Okay.
And it's a group of like four or five people who get to decide on tax breaks in the city of Atlanta. So these people may not even be from the city of Atlanta, but Fulton County gets to the side of this. And so not Amazon, Elon Musk was up. Twitter or X or whatever the heck you call his company now was up. And they were given this $10 million tax break to create something that they were going to create anyway.
Yeah.
It's like a data center. It's not even like something that's going to create a whole lot of jobs.
Yeah.
But meanwhile... a huge issue is affordability of property taxes, right? And so when corporations aren't paying, when they get a tax break, that burden is being shifted to homeowners.
That money's got to come from somewhere,
right? And so we could lower people's property taxes and create more affordability if more companies were paying their full tax. Anyone who's been in the city of Atlanta knows that our infrastructure is not top notch, right?
Nope.
There's plenty of things that we can spend money on that we're not currently, because we're giving this money away. And so that's, for me, that I'm not a huge fan of the tax incentive thing. But I also get why people feel like they need to do it, because if you don't do it, then they might go somewhere else. And
they are going to go somewhere
else.
So it's necessary, right? Yeah. It's a necessary evil. But again, I think we have to have organizations like ours and others that really help provide the oversight that to ensure that the benefit is really being felt where it's supposed to be felt. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Hey guys, just jumping in here real quick with an opportunity for you to bring FCS's principles and practices to your neighborhood. We would love to take you and your local partners through our 2-year multi-sector cohort that we call City Shapers. Cohorts launching this year will be partially funded by the Lilly Endowment, so it's a great time to jump in. We have taken 3 communities through this process already and would love to bring it to you next. Contact us today to learn more at fcsministries.org. Now, some of the other models that are out there, this is kind of almost on the other end of the spectrum where you've got this like massive corporation and factory and all that. There's another thing that's a pretty popular, compelling idea, is the idea of supporting the entrepreneur. Like, there's got a lot of people out there with great ideas. They just need some support. Is that the kind of scale we should be thinking about? So rather than like thousands of people in a major factory, should we be thinking about helping, individual entrepreneurs and like small startups and that kind of thing? Is that a sustainable or a appropriate kind of neighborhood-based approach to economic development?
Well, I think it's part of it is certainly part of a larger strategy. And it's one that I think we subscribe to. I mean, we are truly believers that individuals that have ideas that can benefit the neighborhood, particularly those types of services and resources that help or opportunities that help remove barriers that neighbors have are certainly necessary, right? And so investing in those types of strategies or business opportunities makes all the sense in the world because it's leading to benefit for the greater good, right? And that's what we're looking for. The biggest opportunity or biggest obstacle that entrepreneurs have is startup, right? They have a lot of great ideas out there.
Yeah.
And so the more that we can help secure that operational capital for startup that's necessary, the more benefit to, I think, for the greater neighborhood there will be, right? So I certainly subscribe to the notion of helping young entrepreneurs step up to the plate and be able to not only make a great life for themselves, but also develop businesses that where the benefit cascades down to neighbors in the rest of the neighborhood.
Yeah, I think, again, all tools should be used.
Yeah.
And so I don't think there's any one magic bullet. The way I have tangibly seen, so we partner with a group called Start Me, who does an incubator. And what I have watched them do really well is free people up from what they've been doing, mm-hmm. if it's kind of an albatross on them, right? Mm-hmm. If they can't, like, they've been doing this job or they have this idea for a business and they just can't get it to work, but they love it. Mm-hmm. And so they've been able to, like, you know what? You're actually, like, you're onto something. This isn't going to work, but that might work. Mm-hmm. And when releasing them and freeing them of that thing that's they've kind of been holding on to, mm-hmm. that's been keeping them back. Because it's just investing in people. Like, it doesn't have to be entrepreneurship, right? But it's just, it's caring for people, it's investing in them, it's giving them the time mm-hmm. to walk them through what it is they want to do with their life. So it is for sure something that can be valuable, but it may not create what the intended, mm-hmm. you know, when we say we're creating an entrepreneurship program, right, we're saying, well, we're going to create entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And that may happen, that you also mm-hmm. may just create a better human,
yeah.
right, who is the better employee, who is supporting themselves mm-hmm. in another way.
Yeah.
And so for me, that outcome is the outcome is less important than the journey.
Yeah, yeah,
And so the journey you're on is more important.
And in some stories where like some of the Start Me, cohort members have learned, like, oh, this is somewhere between a hobby and a side hustle. Like, I getting the clarity that if I were to let go of my job to pursue this, like, it would actually put my family in a worse position, and being able to have a level of support to discern. Because even in like well-funded environments, like, a lot of small businesses fail. A lot of startups fail. And so when you're in a less funded environment, the risk is so much higher. And so being able to have the kind of support that doesn't put people in an unnecessary risk that can cascade it even worse kind of outcomes. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to, actually kind of to that point, mm-hmm. I was going to say it's, you know, oftentimes I think people, when you talk about business development or small businesses, you know, it's only successful if the person is, or the entrepreneur is a millionaire.
Right. Yeah. But overnight sensation.
Overnight sensation, right? But what if it's, we're talking about a business that nets a person $100,000 to $150,000 a year, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, that's not a bad living.
Right.
And so for a lot of small businesses, small business owners, right? That's a great return, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And but again, there's enough there that also benefits the other neighbors in the community, mm-hmm. right? That it cascades down. Mm-hmm. It others can feel the benefit, because oftentimes, obviously, there are goods and services that come mm-hmm. Behind that you know, you can get at lower prices, right? Yeah. That I now can afford in the neighborhood mm-hmm. versus having to travel, you know, miles away.
Yeah. And you think about, like, even so, you know, if you have 24 small businesses that are all doing different things, you know, that are, you know, maybe employing a, you know, how many, 500, 2,000 people, whatever that might end up being, like, all those businesses are creating social civic connectivity versus, like, if you have a warehouse that's got a few thousand, like, you brought a few thousand jobs, but, like, nobody goes to the warehouse to, like, greet their neighbor, and right? Like, so again, like, trying to use this lens of, are we creating healthier places versus just
right.
more jobs, right? And how does supporting small businesses and that kind of thing, and on that, like, what in a neighborhood like South Atlanta, what would need to be done to ensure small businesses have the support they need that might be unique to a neighborhood like South Atlanta?
There's a lot of infrastructure. So the city needs to step up, or the state, or someone needs to say, hey, this area is destroyed. Mm. We have to rebuild it. Mm-hmm. Right? And so there needs to be acknowledgement, of not only the acknowledgement, but then the actual action. Infrastructure yep. dollars yeah. to obviously a bigger thing. I think, again, it's not just giving out small business loans, right? Mm. It is, you know, and this is the work of FCS, right? Like, mm. It's looking at a family, an individual household holistically, because they may be a fantastic entrepreneur. They may be a great business operator, but you know, our schools can be challenging, our housing stock can be challenging. Mm-hmm. Again, there's all these other barriers that can layer into maybe make why someone may not be successful. Mm-hmm. And so it's looking at it holistically. Mm-hmm. It's not just, hey, someone's just been waiting for this opportunity. And that might be the case, right? There might be someone who's just out there waiting and they need this opportunity and they're gone. But most likely there's all these other things that are kind of pushing in on them and in their life that are preventing them from being the best version of who they can be. And so if we can help free up that energy to where they can focus on being the entrepreneur, then I think we'll have a better chance of success. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. And being that advocate, right?
Yeah.
Oftentimes I think the young entrepreneur needs that voice, somebody to be that voice for them, to help represent them in their dreams and their goals, right? Oftentimes that's missing, particularly in a neighborhood like historic South Atlanta. That's something that's missing. And again, I'll keep saying this, but that's why we're here. That's our role to be the voice for those that have a dream and help make those dreams come true.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about the support needed for economic development is not always economic, or the support for business in a neighborhood like this is not always about business. Like there's a whole other set of disadvantages that have happened to neighborhoods like this, and that being able to, I get to your point, think holistically about people, about their families, about the neighborhood, and that some of our best interventions for business growth may not be about a business plan. It could be about sidewalks, right? It could be just about that.
Well, we've had this great plan with the city, plan, and we've had the drawing on paper.
That's enough.
But how do you have, you know, four or five small micro businesses, right? Mm-hmm. If in our parking lot, we could line our parking lot with four or five, you know, container type things that where you could, if you want to open an ice cream shop, right, you're not having to lease this huge thing. You can do it small, right? So it's being creative in what you do offer, thinking outside the box. It's, you know, for us, it's building off of the success of the stores downstairs and allowing others to kind of generate that. Okay, well, you have 400 people a day coming there. Well, yeah, you know, you want to run a flower shop? Absolutely. Put your flower shop next. It'll be good for both of us, right? And so, again, it's about design, how you implement things, but it's creating it at a scale that it's not going to be a $1 million business right away, but maybe it can support your family. And and that doesn't have to be. I think we often have these grandiose, like we want this thing to be on the, you know, we want to be Jeff Bezos when he was dreaming up. Sorry, I won't say the word anymore. Right? But it's okay.
We all want to have our own rocket ship, right?
That's true. But it's okay just to give someone the small little space that gets them started, right?
Yeah. That's good. And what, I mean, so one of the things that we care about or concerned about is the racial wealth gap. You know, like it's so economic development is often thought of in terms of like income, which is obviously different from wealth. And so how do we think about economic development in ways that doesn't just improve income opportunities, which we care about that certainly, but how do we think about economic development as a means of building wealth, intergenerational wealth? Like, how does economic development play into that long term?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question, Sean. And oftentimes, that's probably the other issue that I have when we talk about all of the large companies coming into neighborhoods, just bringing jobs. It's like nobody really thinks about, you know, behind those doors at each rooftop, there's probably some small kids, right, that are living in those households. And so when we think about economic development, we have to think holistically, as Jeff talked about earlier. But what's the benefit long term, not just to the one individual, but also the entire family? And so if we are really implementing an economic development strategy that's comprehensive and that's thoughtful and based on needs of the individuals in the community, then I think we're putting ourselves in a position to really facilitate that intergenerational wealth transfer that we really want to be achieving, right? Because we're helping someone with not just getting themselves a job so that they can pay the bills, but they're also in a better position to ensure that the individuals that live in their household, their children, mm-hmm. are connected and are able to access the services and resources that they need in order to be successful, and put themselves, set themselves up for brighter futures. We're really paying attention to the schools, right? And making sure that the schools are performing, are able to really educate kids the way kids need to be educated in order to move on to post-secondary opportunities. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all say education is a great equalizer. Mm-hmm. And I think education gets left out a lot in the economic development conversation, right? We don't talk a lot about schools. We always talk about jobs, but we never talk about what it takes to prepare individuals for those jobs and being successful in those jobs long term.
You know, we, of course, you know, the whole pull yourself up by your bootstraps, right? The whole idea like, oh, you give someone opportunity and they will just take and run with it, right? It's a bunch of BS. We all know this.
Jeff said so, BS.
That could have gone worse. I didn't. And so it's acknowledging that, you know, again, we bring 2,000 jobs and we kind of think about those low wage jobs being what give, like what end up going to the neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
Versus thinking about, okay, when company X is coming, like how do we include our neighbors in every step of the process? Not just the entry level job at the end, but is there a headquarters that's being built? Like, are they? Do we have contractors that are pulling people from our from there? You know, how are we preparing people now to get not just the lower entry level jobs, but farther up? And so, again, I think we just look at it as this the little crumb that we give, and not really think about how to incorporate people the whole way. And then the other piece would be this ownership, right? Like again, the more upper leadership, but also ownership of, and in a setting where they can thrive, right? And so I think, you know, too often the story has been, you know, like there, you know, 30 years ago, there were tons of businesses in the old Fourth Ward, right? But now the Beltline's there. How many of those are white owned businesses? Right. And what's different is the economics. And so as we're creating spaces where people want to be, how do we make sure that that market that's coming is going to be reserved for, opened up to first for those who have been historically disadvantaged?
Yeah. So what's interesting about the large job, you know, bringer is that a case could probably be made that that is probably increasing the racial wealth gap, because if it's a large corporation, the maybe a paycheck of income is going to the entry-level employees, but the wealth is going up top, which is probably not going to be based in Atlanta and it's not going to be benefiting a neighborhood. And so being able to think about, again, are we increasing wealth long-term, not just a stable income? Which, again, if you don't have a stable income, that we need that. Step one, it's really important. But if we're thinking about generational well-being and thriving, right? And to me, I think all of this is a representation of like having like a poverty solution lens versus like a healthy places lens. Because like poverty solutions, like get you affordable rent and a living wage job. Like that's the poverty solution lens. But like place lens is like, no, I want you to own a home. I would love for you to own a business. Like it moves towards ownership versus like, you know, survival, you know, crumbs, as it were.
And I would look at, well, and for sure, money is important, right? I'm not trying to say like, hey, you know, we should give people more other than just money. Like, for sure, we have to help people with finances, but wealth is beyond just money, right? Like, wealth is, what is the quality of the neighborhood that you live in? Like, you might, you know, make $500,000 a year, but if you're next to the factory and next to the highway and you're breathing all this polluted air and your streets aren't safe, right? And so we have to create places that allow people to thrive, irregardless of finances. Finances are important. We have to make sure people have access to that. But we have a lot of work to do here still in South Atlanta and plenty of other places around this country where people aren't wealthy based on their place. And we need more places that can. And I think when you create beautiful places and you include everybody, that's going to increase wealth, the monetary wealth as well, versus what we have now as well. You know, if you do end up being successful, you try to leave this place right? because of the lack of wealth and the infrastructure that's around here.
Well, I'm excited about the future of South Atlanta and all the things we're up to. I appreciate you guys, your vision, your passion, and your knowledge for this work. I'm looking forward to all the problems we're going to solve. But what do we say the next 6 months? We're going to get all this wrapped up.
Six weeks.
I mean, before the end of 2024, we'll be done. Yeah, thank you guys. Appreciate being able to work with you on this.
Awesome. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Sean.
The best way to learn about our economic development work and everything else we do is to come see it for yourself. We love hosting guests in historic South Atlanta. Coming March of 2024, we will be hosting a two-day immersive event called Open House. Come, meet our team, see our work, and walk the neighborhood. To register, go to fcsministries.org/openhouse. Place Matters is produced by Focused Community Strategies, whose mission it is to partner with under-resourced neighborhoods to provide innovative and holistic development that produces flourishing communities and God's shalom. Place Matters is hosted by FCS's training and consulting team. If you'd like to inquire about our training and consulting services, please reach out to us via our website or find us on LinkedIn and social media. This information can be found in the show notes. If you'd like to watch these episodes, the video can be found on our YouTube channel. If you like this episode, please share it on social media. Your support means a lot to us. This show was edited by Tim Rhodes with music by Eric North. Special thanks to David Park, Becca Klein, and Rose Silva at FCS for their work in organizing and recording these sessions. We would also like to say thanks to our partner, Lilly Endowment, Inc., whose Thriving Congregations grant has made this podcast possible.